Hello, and welcome to the Groovy Uncle Podcast, presented by me, Glenn Prangnell. The Groovy Uncle Podcast takes a look at the creative output of a highly regarded, prolific bunch of musicians and artists from the Medway Towns. So let's dive into a super groovy uncle-ness.
Paddling the quim feed, one vacid nutcake.
Groovy Uncle fans will recognise the voice of my guest today, for it is he who provided the spoken word performance as the comically sinister character, the Oil and Colour Man. Having left Medway for the wide open spaces of Australia in 2017, outsider artist, writer, performer and one-third of avant-garde soundscapists, the Hand of Stabs, he's a man who inhabits a creative world of twisted language and warped sound that will challenge, delight, baffle and confound you. So prepare for your plum gusset to be underfingered while simultaneously being bum-throttled into papalusion by a mind burp in the aftervoid, as we take a trip down under to lick the pledge from the table leg of life, and perhaps, we'll finally get the measure of Mr. James Worse.
Fleck of pinchwork, bust of fender plume, pell of quandarain, bamboon of tockle knot, pedge of moulder blast, neem of pip crisp, snowl of venti bob, graham of splinter weem, pelk of timber vobe, plute of whimper crisp, peel of vim spit, clut of mum bone, bale of catalope, peck of tender boast, queel the egg note, a turn of the fog blossom, poem of night throat, poke of mantis spear, tattled in fog spot, into the soup flume. Underpong of leg metal, blood beard, plumes of whale rot, fumient and helitose, at his toes, a spool of felkin bore, turbled in heapy pulps, stick moth, eyewardly munderblown by a snutty gelp, grab handling the thunderpot, he leaves helm all under flisky tummock, the pelm of wonderworm, gullifant, orifant, homboid, and spasmic, clasping lug buckle on handbag, a merbling pondulance rises to his wattled tock spout. Oftly such verbiforms outforced, now jetical from beam squeak. Twickaboo! A snatty quelp of lung bug, curbing his wheel tip at door flap, lag tackled his beetle feet.
Hello, James.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Good. Glad to hear it. Now, the interesting thing is you emigrated to Australia.
That's right.
I think you probably made a wise move there. How long ago was that?
That was a couple of years now. 2017, was it? The end of, I think.
Yeah.
I can't count, so that's some years, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Do you like it there, or do you sort of have any regrets about moving?
Well, I don't know, really, because I've not really spoken to anyone.
Taking your time.
By the time I sort of worked out where everything was, like, we went into lockdown, so now yeah. I've forgotten where all those things are. And anybody that I did talk to, I can't remember what I said. So I'm sort of existing in a bit of a vacuum. But it's kind of nice.
Yeah. But then everyone is at the moment, so you're not alone in that. In a sense. And how have you been coping over the last 18 months in lockdown?
Well, I've been sitting in a beanbag a lot of the time on the roof. Then we've got a little space out on the roof. And it's been very nice sitting in a beanbag, reading and drawing and sort of playing music.
Yeah, I can certainly see the appeal of that. I mean, that seems idyllic to me, sitting in a beanbag on a roof.
It's nice. And I can sort of look out at the city from where we are, and it's all very sparkly and nice. So, yeah, just doing music, really, and recording stuff, doing lots of artwork. I've been writing a lot, so that's kind of gone a bit crazy with the writing.
Has what's been going on in the outside world had any influence on your writing or your work?
I suppose just a kind of, there's a kind of disconnect, isn't there? And that in itself is its own kind of stimulus in a way. So yeah. Although it's been very freaky being here during all of this, I think, some of the oddness of it is helped my work, and I think I thrive on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for a normal, going back to a normal sort of thing, I'm quite happy for things to be abnormal.
There was this thing, I think I said in an earlier interview, that early on in the lockdown, when it was all a bit freaky and a bit scary and it made people think a bit, well, some people, there was this theory bandying about for a very short, it was very short-lived, that when we come out of it, we'll all be much, much better people. We'll be kinder to each other. We'll be better. Clearly that hasn't worked. That hasn't happened. In fact, it's possibly worse. So maybe it's okay to just be away from people.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm quite good at, not being in kind of communication with people. That's my natural state, is not being in a conversation. You're the only person that wants to talk to me, Glenn.
Well, there you go. And ironically, I'm exactly the same as you. I'm perfectly all right on my own. It doesn't drive me nuts. I can always find something to do, and I'm all right in my own space. So kind of ironically, there's two of us who aren't fussed about speaking to people, speaking to each other on the other side of the world. Oh, the irony.
Not used to it. Forgive me if I don't make much sense.
No, you're making perfect sense to me, Jim. I'm assuming then you haven't had an opportunity to meet up and work with other artists and musicians and whatnot.
Well, I've met a handful of people before we went into lockdown. I have spoken to some people. I am exaggerating, saying I haven't spoken to anybody. That's not strictly true. I have, actually. Yeah.
But not enough people to pick up an Australian accent, I notice.
No, I can't imagine that happening. I think the kids are sounding a little bit Aussie.
This series of interviews I'm doing is called It's What You Do. So would I be right in saying what you do is outsider art?
Well, it's very intuitive for me what I'm doing. It's not very planned, or I don't sort of work out any big schedule or what, it's just like, oh, I think I'll make a film. It's like that. So it's very sporadic. I think the outsider term, I don't know if it's a term you can sort of assume yourself, because that's kind of, I don't know. It doesn't, I spoke to Chris DeCB about this like ages ago, and we were in agreement that you can't really say I am an outsider. Yeah, I feel a bit uncomfortable using that term, because if someone else decided, then I'm kind of okay with that, but I don't think I'd apply it to myself, because that's sort of, it's like I'm in this place over here, and I'm just in my place. I'm not trying to be obtuse. I'd like to be more consistent if I could. It evades me. Consistency evades me.
When you were still living here in Medway, you would occasionally perform in various locations, pubs, outside venues, etc. And you'd read some of your work. And sometimes you'd perform with the Hand of Stabs, who we'll talk about later. But doing your own stuff on your own, reading that kind of work that was quite challenging perhaps for some people and unusual, what was that like for you? Was that quite nerve-wracking? I mean, I should imagine it was quite difficult.
I don't know. I suppose I was quite nervous before I sort of did the first couple of things. But, you kind of learn quite fast what you need to do and what you need to not do. I always think of it like a doorway when you're performing. It's like you can either sort of shy or hold back from it, or you can just like leap through the door and just be like, here I am, and I just think I wouldn't be able to forgive myself if I didn't leap through the door with it, you know. I think I've possibly inadvertently created this quite, I don't know, I don't want to say aggressive, but I mean, the James Worse kind of persona, you know, the public address method, you know, is the whole thing about appearing in front of people. It's like, that is the method. It's like going through the door and grabbing people by the throat. So that's my method.
From the whelm of Tendermole, a trembly chord of potty song, loofedly smuttled these ink bells for the cloakworm. A bead of pugwelt crubflunders the peacebone, pink-like and fusty, in plume of winter vein, smoulder beard, clip pokes the bustle moth, and a bilbified gloat. Oh, wall of Blundervale in Corpid Goose House. What pooly-eyed smears of nightcoat peach gleam in this fluorient daddy badge. Whew. Thrunty or muley bunticles, boothed in ellulite, sprinkled and tar-busted, crupulence virulent in stingled buttersnips, Potius Nephromone, and trumbulence inconducent. Inquus bulgings, fluorient toothings, all in cramped bonifacely. Such solulent balm for a hootable celophony. A sputile muckling of bittiquick, contortled wildly among dormant polytoch. Blinkly star-worn and hulient in the vastings, rosy bunticles decrescent in marbled testuary to luluba, tubescent and starkling, benailing the tender flap, the fluty hellbag, all hugish and multipled, pork bustling in bungent pantiful, his very portaled eye-horn, vorpid and mortient, thorting on naughty rock-points, and naturally unto wombly hot bulbs and fansuckle. Vambic bleem hem of honey bottom.
There's a certain unhingedness about what I do that, you know, that sort of is a bit of a side swipe for people anyway. So they're slightly wondering what's going on for, you know, quite a while. Well, they kind of cogitating on what I'm saying, and there's suddenly things start coming through. I think it works a little bit like that for the sort of spoken stuff. I don't like to call myself a musician because I don't know how to do music, so I flinch if I have to put music down, and art if I have to put that down. Then I can't stand the idea of poetry, you know, for myself. Like, I can't abide, would hate to have to call what I do poetry, but, you know, sometimes somebody expects you to classify something and, you know, you're obliged to say, yes, it's music. Those things sound very grandiose, yeah. And sort of very like, I'm a poet, you know. Yeah, well, it's all the association that goes with those words. Never really found an adequate kind of term for what I'm doing. Really.
And the good news is that you've captured a lot of your work on tape, and you've released quite a few things over the years in various formats.
Oh, there's been quite a few things I've done recently. There have been a few kind of little tape releases that have come out, noisy and unpleasant for people to listen to. There's a nice tape that came out on Steep Gloss, the cassette label from Wigan, and that was with Expose Your Eyes. And that's called Widden. Yeah, I've got a couple of kind of vocal doodahs that I've released over the years. It's interminable.
Let's go back to your childhood.
Jim, tell me, what is your earliest memory?
But it's a sensory experience that I had as a very small person. I was possibly 3 or so, and I couldn't remember being under the table at my grandparents' flat in Kennington.
Hiding again.
Well, yes, very much so. not being very sociable, and being under the table. And I can remember licking the table leg and tasting the kind of whatever it was, like Mr. Sheen or something, Pledge probably, and just licking this table leg, and it just kind of thinking, it's kind of horrible but nice. And yeah, I'm having quite a nice time.
It's like the smell of petrol. When I was a kid, I used to love the smell of petrol. Weird.
Yeah, I love the smell of petrol.
Play-Doh, that was another favourite. That glue. Do you remember that thick paste type glue that you used to spoon out and stick cards in scrapbooks and things?
Delicious.
Yeah, just eat it.
It's all a bit Proustian here. That appeals to me more than thinking of, you know, a musical. I'm not poo-pooing your question, Ben. Far from it. You know, the sensory kind of impressions sort of get to me, whereas sort of cultural signifiers probably just sort of float past me a bit.
Yeah, that Proustian thing where you taste or smell something and you're immediately transported right back to a certain place and a certain time.
Yeah, it's very powerful, that is, isn't it? Things I have smelt.
So, but I have to say, in these Let's Go Back sections, you're the only person that said that their earliest musical childhood memory was sitting under the table, licking the table leg and enjoying the Pledge. So that's brilliant. That's the kind of content we want for this podcast.
But it's a genuine answer, and I stand by it. I'm not trying to be weird or anything. It's like that is genuinely the earliest memory.
By the way, before we started recording, you introduced me to Little Jim. It's not what you think, ladies and gentlemen.
It's not what it looks like.
Little Jim looks good to me.
He's here. Little Jim's here.
I can see him, and he looks very dapper, if I may be so bold.
Hello there. He's quite officious. Yes. It will take over if we let him. So I'll do my best to keep it under wraps.
I think you should. He looks a bit like you, sounds a little bit like you, but not quite. But I don't trust him. I don't trust him. I don't trust him, Jim.
No, he is somebody not to be trusted, for sure. Definitely don't trust anybody.
Looks a bit of a Jobsworth to me.
That's enough, Little Jim. Off you go. Back in your suitcase. Yeah. Little Jim is a small cut-out shape with a person's face drawn on it.
I mentioned Hand of Stabs earlier. Could you tell me a bit about that?
The basic premise was that we would only use the most portable of instruments or handheld devices to make sound with, so that we could literally walk anywhere or play anywhere. We wouldn't use electronic gear. We had a little battery-operated amp, but that was it. I think Chris sometimes used an iPad and a laptop. You know, we had to be prepared to perform in all conditions. What we thought we'd do is go to lots of places around Medway that we thought were interesting, that had interesting stories behind them, and places that had some sort of mystery still about them. You know, there's lots of places, I think Kent is quite an evocative landscape, you know, especially sort of estuary kind of spaces. Like we were talking about this earlier, about sort of that Proustian sensory smell and taste, estuarine sort of mud smell, and thinking of ships leaving Gravesend like Heart of Darkness or whatever it might be, and sort of tapping into that kind of lost parallel.
Thank you.
I think it's quite ubiquitous, really, in the UK, isn't it? Great Britain. It's like the history is sort of right behind a thin veil. We wanted to sort of access that, and we wanted to get close to that and kind of bathe in that whole idea. And that was the sort of gist of it, that we would head to places that had a kind of historic or mythical resonance, and we would try and tap into it somehow by just sort of getting into the vibe of the place and sort of researching it and finding what would be the best time to go there, and not particularly scoping places out too much. A lot of times we would go, that'd be the first time we've ever been there. You know, it was a discovery for us sometimes. But other places were kind of familiar that we thought other people should visit. And it was kind of to coax people out and look at the kind of historic, mythic wealth of stuff people have on their doorstep that they might not know about. So I think, you know, I hope we kind of opened people's eyes to some of the batshit stuff that's kind of just lurking around very close to the surface that you might not notice, that is, you know, it's there in the fabric of the place, particularly Medway. You're tripping over the kind of historic stuff. It's potent. It's, you know, I don't know how you can be a creative person and not kind of respond in some way to that vast reserve of energy that is still kind of churning in the background. It's not always a kind of benevolent thing. Sometimes it can be quite scary and surprising. And, you know, we've played in a few places that had very dark kind of feel to it. And sometimes we wouldn't even realise that until later when we'd listened to the recordings that we'd made. I'm thinking particularly of, we did a thing, a little action in Cuxton in a railway arch. And it was in relation to the discovery of like Saxon remains when the rail lines had been built. A lot of stuff had been uncovered. You know, when the original kind of London to Dover line, I suppose, would have been put in, they found a load of Saxon stuff. And then also when the high-speed link went in, like Eurostar, they found more stuff. And we thought we had used this like access point to, you know, investigate. And we did this sort of bright, breezy, kind of quite sort of, we thought was quite a pastoral piece on a beautiful summer's day. When we listened to it back, it sounded like black metal. It was kind of like this kind of, it's like intensely evil that we weren't aware we were creating, but that's how it came out. And, you know, we thought we were doing some sort of quite whimsical little. Yeah, we did a couple of kind of organised recordings, but yeah, it wasn't, you know, the idea was really to be mobile, to be evasive and not to be recorded. So, but we thought we'd have to sort of document ourselves a bit, so we tried to do a few recordings, but yeah, I mean, the idea is not to record, really. Yeah, and we tried to collaborate with, you know, as many interesting people as we could, and we worked with loads of cool people. No, that would.
Fucking Rolling Stones, you know nothing. We were banned from a fucking library.
Yeah.
But you never were. Were you, Keith?
This or that? Sand or pebbles?
Pebbles.
Christmas or New Year?
Neither. Christmas.
Petrol or diesel? Good job I'm not asking that in the UK.
So I'm going to have to go petrol.
Handshake or high five?
A handshake, I'm afraid.
A firm handshake, I hope.
Oh, no. A limp, wet one.
Trombone or swanny whistle?
Trombone, obviously.
Late night or early morning?
Early morning.
Secrets or confessions?
Secrets.
Hillside or seaside?
Hillside.
Body or soul?
Soul.
That's it. You've done. You've passed the test.
Did I get any of them right?
You got all of them right. So what are you up to currently, Jim?
Very excited because I have recently bought a jigsaw and I have been spending a lot of time cutting shapes out of wood and I'm going to put them together to make nice constructions. And that's what I feel like doing for a while. Expect little thing constructions to appear.
Now, the other day on Twitter, I saw there's a little clip of you playing a little thing. You was hitting something with your hand and it was making a noise. What was that?
That probably was one of my tank drums. It's a butane tank that's... I've got two of them, and they're butane tanks that have had the bottoms lopped off and welded together. So they're kind of... whatever that shape is, donut shape.
That'll do.
Yes, but without a hole, importantly.
A donut without a hole, that's
allowed. There's a hole underneath where the sound, where the music comes out, and there's little kind of slits in it. So it's like a... tongue drum, slit drum kind of thing, but with metal. It's a very roughly made one. So it's very DIY thing, and it weighs a ton. But you can get them anywhere nowadays. They seem to have become quite popular. New agey kind of people are really into them.
It looks like it was something very pleasing to play. I could tell you were lost in it.
Yeah, I do go off on one. That's what I've done that since I was a kid, and I get very, very, whatever the endorphins and the good feel good juices in your brain that start to seep out. All my juices seep out, Glenn, when I'm doing it, and I won't apologise for that.
James Worse, thank you very much for the time. It's really been nice talking to you and seeing you again. Thank you for allowing me and my listener into your very, very strange and wonderful world. Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Good day.
Thank you for listening to my podcast, and I hope you enjoyed it. Tune in next time when I'll be joined by another guest who'll be giving a fascinating insight into their creative life.